It's time for Apple Farm Chatter, your podcast for all things Apple Farm Service, the latest ag news, dealership events, and upcoming trends. Put on your work clothes. Apple Farm Chatter begins now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Apple Farm Chatter. Ken Holmes here with Travis Wolf. Hi, Travis.
Hey, Ken. How's it going?
Good. We're up at Bodkin's today because we are meeting with Mr. Bruce Clevenger from the THE,
Ohio State University.
And Bruce, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. Thanks for saying the We really appreciate that. Some people take that the wrong way, but especially when we go to other land-grant universities across the Midwest, they feel like the is kind of an overstatement.
So. Well, we forgot to put it one time. We got a nice letter from the Ohio State University, so by legal contraction, we have to say the, T-H-E. By saying it, we said it three times, so we have now officially, we're clear from that letter.
Everything.
Okay, we're good. But Bruce, thanks for joining us. We talked, Bruce, we had a Farm Forum event in December where you came out and you talked with us. It was so interesting. We wanted to bring you back, be able to talk a little bit in depth of what you talked about there and kind of go off of that. So I guess, Bruce, you are the Associate Professor and Field Specialist Farm Management with the Ohio State University. What does that mean? What do you do for Ohio State?
Yeah, it's a great job to be in. So I was a county agent, a county educator for 28 years up in Defiance County. So in Northwest Ohio, I was working with producers in the Defiance County area. But then a couple years back, I applied to become a field specialist for farm management specifically. And the fun part about working for the Ohio State University is I work in the Department of Extension, which is part of the College of Ag. And the Department of Extension, our dean refers to as that statewide campus. We think of the Columbus campus, we think of the Worcester campus, and she refers to the Department of Extension as the statewide campus because we have 88 county extension offices, and we also have field specialists like myself that are out there doing a variety of in-depth work. My in-depth area is specifically farm management. To me, farm management is just as diverse as agronomy or animal sciences. There's a lot of disciplines to learn and to apply in the field of farm management. Now, some would argue maybe it's not quite as exciting as planting corn or feeding cattle or those kind of things, but farm management, I think now more than ever, when we see some narrowing margins and shrinking pressure in the economies of agriculture, I think it's important to focus in on farm management. So what I do for OSU Extension, I go around and assist county educators doing county meetings with producers around the state of Ohio. Education is the key, and conducting research and applying that research out there to farm managers across the state of Ohio.
Okay. Yeah, I know at the Farm Forum meeting that we had, you had topics that people don't want to have with budgeting when it comes to, you know, your operation. How do you make it where you can make the most you can when there's not a lot out there to be made? Not fun conversations, but I think everyone last year, it just kind of took us all by surprise. The end of the year when we meet with our accountant, we said, oh, wow. So I'm sure that's a lot of what you hear from talking to your farmers, too.
And we do. And now more than ever, we emphasize a phrase that at least I think I've been saying for a number of years. We want our accounting system to do more than just a tax return. We want to be able to tell the story. The best story that a farmer can hear and know about their farm is from their own numbers. And from an economic standpoint, having a good record-keeping system, I encourage people to really do more than just a tax return. At a minimum, we want to do a balance sheet with the lender every year. We also want to do an accrual adjusted income statement, if at all possible. Work with your lender, work with OSU Extension, because now more than ever, there are always been a lot of moving non-cash values that happen within the farm. And actually, a farm can have cash for a period of about 3 years, and there's a lag that farms can go broke and still have cash in their checking account. But as you look at the entire operation, there's some erosion of values that are really a draw. And these are the times. We see peaks and valleys all the time in agriculture. And we are in one of those valleys now in farm economy. So it's a great time to sharpen that pencil and do more than a tax return as we have those books open at the end of the year and beginning of the calendar year here.
Okay, yeah. And I think we're going to go into a little bit of that. But we thought we would first kind of set the tone of what we kind of saw in 2024 when it comes to it. And how did we do that, Travis?
oh, we just reflected back on our past. We thought of a game for inspiration.
Yeah.
We thought of the game where everybody just gets mad because everything costs a lot.
2024 was frustrating. And so we thought, what game is there that nobody in the end gets likes and just gets frustrated?
Monopoly.
Monopoly. So here is our version of Monopoly for you, Bruce.
Excellent.
It's time to bring family night to the farm. It's Farmopoly from Hasbro, the makers of Monopoly. Grab your family, grab your boots, and head on down to the farm to make your fortune.
Chance card, you've caught the bird flu. Owed $25,000 and go back to start?
It's time to take a seat in the life of a farmer.
I'll buy Park Place. How much?
$17,000 an acre plus unpaid title bill from the previous owner of $200,000. Would you like to put your children up for collateral?
With what you love from Monopoly, like realistic metal pieces.
I'll take the planter.
I'll take the hay bale.
I'll take the tractor. Nope, not the green one. That one's always broken.
And with all the twists and turns that makes it a game you've loved to loathe.
Wait, I have to owe the bank money when I pass go?
You read the rules. Time to pay your fertilizer and seed.
But you still owe me from the last year's cash rent.
Grab your copy of Farmopoly today and learn why farming isn't for everyone.
Why do we always do this at Christmas? This isn't fair.
I feel like we're starting a discussion on a negative note, but 2024 yeah. was tough. And I guess the question for Bruce is just, what 2024, the recap, why are we here where we are? What happened?
Yeah, so in fact, as we recalled the prior years, for example, 2001, 2002, we had some exceptional grain commodity prices over the course of worldwide here in the United States. Yields were great. We were hitting all kinds of records, both in price and yield, which really just generated a lot of what we would call returns to land and returns to farm, to management and labor. And so there were opportunities that it was easy, you might say, easier then than now. Just in recent years, it was just so easy to really turn a profit. Now, at the same time, during those warm-up years or those wind-up years, our input costs also had pressure up. And so while the revenue was high, our kind of tailing behind were the input costs. And so there was a wide margin. And so now that we've seen a downturn in the commodity prices, it's harder. Those input costs are a little sticky, and they don't come and retract as quickly as maybe the commodity prices have. So that margin is narrowing, and it's starting to put a pinch on farm managers and their cash flow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for 2024, if you could have a, you know, here's the lessons we learned from 24, what would they be?
Yeah, so I think it's the first year that farms were kind of reassessing each line item in their operation and their budget. 2024, we went from positive returns to land in 2023 to estimated negative returns to land. It's just a calculation that we do. Essentially says, well, what money do we have left in the budget to put towards land? And land costs to farmers vary quite a bit from operation to operation. Some of our budgets for Ohio State in 2024, we put in there the full cost of being a cash renter, meaning we're going to be cash renting at $240 an acre on cash rent. And some farms have a little less cost in land because maybe they have some purchased land, fully paid for land, and they've done some cost sharing or cost averaging over many acres in the farm operation. So maybe their cost for land, which is a big one for so many of us in agriculture, was a little bit less. And so they were able to keep that positive margin above, you know, returns to farm land in corn production, soybean production, and so on.
Yeah. You know, interesting. You're talking about land and land costs. The skit we had $17,000 an acre, which we've heard in certain auctions have actually happened. You look it up online. What's the average, not rent, but to own? Isn't it only about like $7,000 an acre? $4,000 to $7,000? I mean, it's not nearly as high, but you see all of this huge range. Do you see it continuing like that? Or do you see this giant window of low to high?
Well, from 22 to 23, and then from 23 to 24, there were exceptional increases in land values that were measured from a couple different sources. One was Ohio Ag Statistics, Ohio State University, and another one was the 7th Fed District out of Chicago. And all of those sources indicated that there were double-digit increases. We're talking 20 to 40% increases per year in the year 2022 to 2023. And then what is now being seen is that those are softening. Now, that's a general statement that those land values are softening, maybe not decreasing, but they're plateauing, meaning I don't think we're going to get away from still seeing some of those high prices that are exceptionally above what we might consider long-term averages of land, because that pressure is still there. And so while we are, even in 2024, saw a 7% increase in farmland values, that was following two consecutive years of double digits in the 20 to 40% increases of farmland. Now, cash rents are a little softer as far as percentage increases, but those still were lagging behind, but still trending the same directions as we see in land value. So the cost of land is really important, but it's not just developers buying that land. A lot of those, the one you mentioned and maybe others that I've heard, those are farmers buying farmed land in farm production. So it's not development, not every case that's buying and pushing those prices up.
Right, right. So I guess you would say, because everyone's worried about they always say the bubble. When does the bubble pop? It has not popped. What you're saying is the bubble's not getting bigger.
Yeah. So the bubble, I don't think there's a bubble that we saw maybe in the Great Recession in the early 2000s and 2009 with the housing recession, the housing bubble. There were some inversions in house values. And so people were upside down, they called it. And there were some interest rate issues. And so there was some, even predator lending was mentioned back in 2009 during that Great Recession. So I don't think that's the case here in agriculture. In fact, I think the balance sheet for a lot of farms across the Midwest are still very strong, which allowed them the financial position to make those purchases and still be able to, again, cost average that higher land value now with some other land that they previously owned. And then you cost average that and you're still able to have an operation that can cash flow those expenses.
Okay. So now we're in 2025. Looking past 24, I mean, I know you don't have a crystal ball, and I know you can't per se this is what's going to happen, but I mean, from what you've seen in the trends for 2025, I mean, what are you predicting? What do you think?
Yeah, I think farms are going to be utilizing their liquidity, their current ratio, basically their cash on hand. Farms may still, though, need to borrow some operating loans. And those are the conversations I've had with lenders that have said some of those conversations have been more difficult in end of 2024 leading into 2025 because the cash position that the farmer had at the end of the calendar year was much different than they've experienced in the previous 2 to 3 years. So it's a different conversation, some operating lines of credits. So I think it's just a what kind of cash do we have available to cash flow the needs of the farm? So debt necessarily is not bad for an operation to be in. And this is kind of the economic principles of debt. Debt is not necessarily bad until it becomes a cash flow issue. So we talk about the national debt, in the U.S. debt. There's some concerns, of course, in the media and in the government about the national debt and our cost of maintaining that past expenditures. And it is that interest cost of servicing that debt causing a cash flow issue in that business or in the government. And so as we look at farm operations, debt isn't necessarily bad. Debt becomes an issue when we can't cash flow it. And so modest interest rates, a lot of the capital that is purchased in farming that's on the books right now has actually been purchased at a pretty decent low interest rates. If we look back to where interest rates were prior to the pandemic and prior to the inflationary changes that we saw, I think most of the assets that are on loan are positioned pretty well with a modest and manageable interest rate.
Okay. I guess, do you have any advice for those that on the cash flow side let's say they're worried looking at their operating loan isn't changing, they're starting off at a weaker position with cash flow. What are some things that they can do when it comes to keeping a positive cash flow when things are getting a little bit tighter than they've ever been?
Yeah, so I think the emphasis that myself and Barry Ward at Ohio State University, we've been talking about refocus on being a low-cost producer. So we are producers of corn, soybeans, and wheat, which are commodities. And the definition of being a commodity producer is that the low-cost producer wins. And that's a, kind of the long-term statement. So a line-by-line cost analysis of what inputs are being invested and put into that crop or even into our livestock is an important part of refocusing in on what it means to be a low-cost producer, because there were probably some products and practices used in the last 4 to 5 years that we had some a little extra, so we had a little extra inputs into the production system. So now's the time to refocus and make sure that there's an ROI on each of those input costs. Renegotiating and maybe determine an example of that would be, based on my soil test levels, are there some farms that I can forego a fertilizer application of phosphorus and potassium potentially based on soil test levels, and having the confidence that says, yeah, well, today, in today's margin and the cash flow that I see ahead of me, could I shave some of my cost and utilize the nutrients that are right there in the soil already?
Yeah, it's a new topic. You mentioned during the farm forum that this idea of maybe chasing the highest yields is not always the best, which is hard to hear. It's just what it's always been, right? It's always been, you know, you're at the coffee shop and you go around and it's kind of the proud moment of, well, I got this in my corn and this in my beans and it's how we're doing. And then, you know, nobody at the coffee shop says, you know, well, yeah, I only had 250 on my corn or 220 on my corn, but, which is less than last year, but I made more.
Yep.
Kind of a talk. And that's a tough talk to have with the farmers.
It is, and especially with nitrogen management, we talk about maximum return to nitrogen. And so bring up an economic concept, the law of diminishing returns. And so I spend a dollar to get an extra bushel, and that bushel, I get more than a dollar in return. I put a dollar in nitrogen, and then I get more than a dollar back because my yield is increasing. So there becomes a point when I keep putting that extra dollar in with a nitrogen cost that I don't get that more than a dollar in corn revenue back. And so that's the law of diminishing returns. And what the idea behind maximizing the maximum return to nitrogen calculation is that it does take into account yields behind the scenes in this model. But what you put in there as far as data is, what's today's price of corn and what's today's or in-season price of nitrogen? And then it helps us calculate what's that diminishing law of diminishing return that says, this is where I'm going to maximize profit per acre, not necessarily yield per acre.
Right. It's just a new concept. I know other things during the meeting we talked about out there. Is there any other than if you lowering your inputs, is there anything out there as far as different practices they can do or different programs that they can do that they might have not done before? Is some anything out there to assist with some other income as well?
You bet. And so take advantage of any FSA, Farm Service Agency program that's out there, whether that's a relief or support program that's out there. Certainly take advantage. That's what those programs are there to do, to support rural America, support agriculture in that options. Conservation payments programs. So when I came down from Defiance County, I switched from the Western Lake Erie Basin into now the Ohio River Basin. And so sometimes conservation payments and incentives for farms to do certain practices, things like soil testing and grid soil testing and variable rate application and cover crops, there are incentive programs out there that the first place I always recommend people to stop by and talk to is their local soil and water conservation district office. If not there, stop by your NRCS, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, your conservationist for the area, and see what USDA programs are there. Other revenue, consider, farmers are considering some side hustles. How am I equipped potentially with my machinery lineup, is there any extra custom work that I could be doing in the neighborhood? For what a farmer told me that, you know, for my crop rotation in 2024, I don't have any wheat in the rotation. So can I help others do some custom baling, generate some straw revenue? Can I help people double crop soybeans after their wheat crop so that the bean crop gets timely planted? And so don't underestimate that ability to use our current assets on the farm, our machinery, to go out and do some custom work for some others in the neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I know you're talking about cover crop and some of the other things, and that's just kind of as a plug for Apple Farm Service and the equipment that we have, is that, you know, if you're looking at trying something new, some type of a new tillage for conservation, whether you want to cut down on tillage and to do more min-till or no-till or some of the other things, cover cropping, reach out to Apples or any of your local dealerships and see what kind of things they have that we can have to help you out. You mentioned, you know, the rates have stabilized and things are starting to, you know, equal out. So, and you mentioned FSA. I guess something that I get asked once in a while, have you heard of farmers starting to get those payments that were approved, what, back in December? Have you heard much about that?
You know, recently I have not heard whether those payments have been distributed because I know that they were in the books, but I know there's a lot of federal spending issues right now as far as distribution of funds and really narrowing in on every line item of the federal budget and really evaluating its purpose. And so I think because I haven't heard, I just wonder if there's a bit of a pause in that.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I figured for someone, what you do, you'd hear it at the coffee shop and this and that about it. So, okay. So we hopefully soon. We're really hoping soon. And then, you know, you mentioned, I guess, on our end, working with dealerships, what can you do if you're a farmer working with a dealership like Apples to be able to help when it comes to readjusting your plan for 2025?
Well, sure. I think specifically from the equipment standpoint, making sure that we have a lineup that's on the farm, that's well-maintained, ready to go to put the best crop into the ground and provide that service that's needed. I'm curious to kind of know firsthand, are the supplies readily available? Are there parts? Is there service? Are there any gaps that, like, Apple Farm Service is feeling a pinch in as far as the supply chain or a lag that's really holding things up? Any thoughts, Ken?
No, really, to be honest, things have, feels like we're back to where we were. I'm really tired of saying pre and post COVID. I really am. And I feel like hopefully we can now move past it, because I feel like we are pre-COVID levels on everything when it comes to supplies, as far as we haven't seen. Actually, it's the first time we have our part sale going on now. And we were shocked as we were doing the prices comparing to last year. Our cost on quite a few things have gone down, surprisingly. And so we were able to pass those savings. So if someone took this year's catalog and last year's, you'll see there's some things that actually we went down in price. A lot of things like some of the oils and anything that had to do with plastic or oil seems like it's gone down compared to last year. So it really seems like dealerships are in a better place. We have plenty of inventory. If you want something, we can get it pretty readily available. And I know it's kind of scary. You hear a lot of manufacturers are making them having to lay off, but a lot of them, they might be closer to levels that they were pre-COVID. Some maybe a little bit lower than they were, but I think they had to hire on when it came to that rush that we had. And so it just seems like things are kind of leveling out. And so I'm sure things will shake up. I'm sure we'll see, you know, things come and go, as they always do when things level out. But I think dealerships are feeling more confident as kind of time goes on. But that's a good question. Yeah. We normally don't get asked questions. Yes, thanks, Bruce. Really.
Well, it kind of confirms that what we've seen in the Federal Reserve economic data that says that the machinery and equipment, including tractors, this consumer price index, specifically for that sector of the economy, farm machinery equipment, it's actually plateaued. And so there was an index set at 100 back pre-COVID. Sorry to mention that. There it is again, pre-COVID. And so we've seen this big ramp up in this inflationary rate, specifically for farm machinery and parts and supplies. And that has softened and actually starting to come down. And that, so that's a good indication that there's not this lag in the food in the supply chain for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think a good point to you, those that are listening, If you're saying when's a good time to get equipment, it would be now, because dealerships like Apple's were sitting on a good amount of equipment. And I think just don't be afraid to reach out and see. I think dealerships are ready to make deals. We've always had been, even more so now. So now is a good time if you're looking at it. I think we see the interest rate. It went down a little bit, then it went back up. It went down a little bit. I mean, little changes. So I think if you're looking for that perfect time where the interest rate is, the people are hoping there's going to be a bubble that pops, you know, like we had right during COVID. I just don't see that happening. I guess from your data, do you kind of confirm that from what you see?
I think you're right on track. I think that's very realistic. And there's inventories are up. I think the supply, farmers getting what they need so that they're ready to go for the 2025. And you mentioned then the energy sector, why some of the supplies were softening in their price, oil, lube, those kind of things. That's very true across the entire energy sector for agriculture. One exception, though, would be natural gas. Natural gas, because of global, well, U.S. exports to global markets. Actually, if a consumer is using natural gas, they're probably going to have some increased cost. And natural gas is kind of a derivative or used in the production of some fertilizers. And so while many, many energy aspects are decreased year over year, natural gas is one that's actually increasing, because the way natural gas gets exported is liquefied natural gas. And you don't necessarily think of Europe maybe buying gas, but this is, think of these huge ocean vessels filled with containers essentially that have very, very large liquefied natural gas on them. So they're supplementing the European market for their need of energy. And that's a result of the Russia-Ukraine war and some of the interference and blockage of energy coming out of Russia to Europe. So I think it's forecasted that we'll probably see a couple years of higher natural gas prices, which is a small portion to the overall energy demand in directly used in agriculture.
Okay. And I feel like we have to bring it up, because you can't go anywhere without, especially here where we are with the locations here with Apple's. Bird flu and egg prices. I'm sure you hear that all the time. You're up in Defiance. We're down here, Mercer, Dark, and those counties. Anything you want to say about, I guess, bird flu and what you see? What's your predictions?
Yeah, so I think what Mercer and Dark counties are experiencing are a little different than my experience that I had in Defiance County. So kind of rolling back time. Back in 2002, 2003, we had one large commercial egg-laying facility in Defiance County. One. It's one property, but it has 16 barns, and it had 4.2 million egg-laying chickens there. Well, that barn, that facility was infected with the highly pathogenic avian influenza, and so that barn was depopulated. The difference that I see from that experience in Defiance County to Mercer Dark County is that we have one commercial farm. We didn't have another commercial farm as far as an infection or a spread for the next 40 to 50 miles away. So we had this biosecurity buffer in this facility in Defiance County. Now, it was hard to see that those birds, they were euthanized, they were composted, and then the barns cleaned, and then that barn got back up and running again. It took a little time. It disrupted a lot of the manure that was being used by agriculture coming out of that facility. But it got back up and going, I thought, pretty quickly. However, it was a kind of an isolated location. Now, fast forward to now here in Dark and Mercer County, 60-some farms affected, both in egg laying, also broilers, and also turkey production. Over 10 million egg layers that have been or are slated for depopulation. That's a huge disruption. And of course, it's going to interfere with the, one, availability of eggs, and two, the price of eggs.
Yeah.
So in Defiance County, so I go shopping. So I roll into my local Kroger, no eggs in the egg case at all, empty. There were a few, some of the other branded and sourced locations, but the majority of the eggs, this was 2 weeks ago, empty. But I go to another grocery store in Defiance County, they had eggs in the case. So it just mattered for the Defiance area where their supply of eggs were coming from. Now, the other source, it was a cheap supermarket, great little hometown grocery store, had a great supply of eggs. Were the prices elevated? A little bit. So it was, that $7, $8 a dozen there. You end up paying $11 or $12 for the 18-pack of dozen of eggs. Inflation. It was made a comment yesterday at a meeting Saturday that I did was... still, eggs are a fairly inexpensive protein source for families still to buy, although the price is much higher than we would expect because of these interruptions in the egg supply.
Yeah, I mean, we hear all the buzz about the egg prices, so I guess, Travis, we put something together.
Yeah, I'll say we've been listening to all these new egg commercials, so we just thought we'd share some with you.
Yeah.
I'll say companies are pushing a new angle.
Nice.
Egg.
Engagement ring. How else could 2 months' salary last forever?
An egg
is forever.
All right, open your boxes. Open your boxes. 1, 2, 3.
Egg. 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 Eggs.
The price of
eggs
has changed. Now you can get extra cash. Recycle old
egg
scraps, gathering dust. Call 1-800-EGG. Get for quick cash.
Tell me, Amanda.
$90.
$90. Is that right? No. You'll move one step for every dollar you missed the price of the
egg.
You missed it $5. You missed it $10. You missed it $15. You missed it $20. You missed it $25. What is the price? $18.
But square cut or pear shape, these
eggs
don't lose their shape.
Eggs
are a girl's best friend.
And like Travis said, we're going for a new angle here. Bruce, you're enjoying that one.
I am, very much. I think it was Travis yodeling on the
it was.
Mm-hmm. One of my hidden talents.
Yes.
That's good. But I mean, just follow up, last question, I guess, on the egg. You said disruptions. How long do you predict there's going to be disrupt? Let's just assume that we actually get a handle on bird flu. It ends here soon. How long will these disruptions last, and what kind of do you predict happening?
Yeah, I don't predict them to... People are really getting frustrated about the depopulation as well, and so it's a really an aggressive approach to really change and restart, hit the restart button on an egg production facility, and it's not easy to do. And if anybody thinks it's easy for a farmer to see and to be part of a depopulation process, I think they really need to check their emotions a little bit, because farmers don't like to see depopulation. It's hard on the human. It's essential for the disease transmission or the break in that. And so it's difficult. I foresee that 12 to 18 months, I hope that we would be back up and going and populating. It boils down to, do we have birds to replace and set those pullets and to become layers? And that production system, we hope still, and we've not heard any indication that is still a clean operation, still safe and producing those birds, that when that barn is disinfected, cleaned, those birds can be placed back in a timely fashion. So I think it's a temporary, based on my experience from Defiance County, it's a temporary process that's painful for the human nature, but also economically, these farms that are relying on this as their family income, it's a disruption for sure.
It is. And I mean, we had that skit on there, but in reality, I mean, just our hearts go out to those that have to deal with this. It's something that, you know, a lot of these operations, generations, it's the first time they've had to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So it's extremely difficult. And we do hope that you're right. Hopefully 12 to 18 months, things are back up to normal and they can move past that.
And I'll also mention that there's some support out there for those that are feeling stressed. Stress can come from that production side, but also financial side. There is a phone number that is available. Dialing 988 is a hotline. You can text and call to receive some support for those. And don't underestimate the value of being able to talk to somebody. Talk to somebody that's outside of your communities, outside of maybe even your family. I'm not saying that talking to your family isn't important or outside the community, but it's okay. It is okay to talk and call that phone number and to get some support. Again, that's dialing 988, and it's a hotline. Specifically, those folks are trained for rural stress and helping in these exact situations for our farm families.
Awesome. Now, Bruce, before you take off, we do have something special for you.
Apple Farm Chatter wants to thank you for being our guests with a special prize. This special prize can be yours, but only by answering this super secret question. Are you ready for your super secret question?
Are you?
Oh boy.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Are you positive? You can.
I mean, it's not too late to say no. Okay, your choice. Here's your super secret question. Drum roll, please. No, drum roll, please. Great. If a woodchuck could chuck wood, how much wood would he chuck? You have 5 seconds.
5 seconds.
Four.
I'm hoping for eight.
Three.
Eight chord?
Yep, that's about what I burned.
Final answer, eight chord?
Eight chord.
Eight chord.
One.
Okay.
All right.
Your answer is...
Eight chord, right?
Eight chord.
That's correct.
Hey!
Congratulations. You've just won your very special prize. It's a new calculator. That's right. It's a brand new 8-digit calculator. Take on your basic mathematical computing with the ability to add, subtract, multiply, and even divide. Warning, calculator doesn't work in the pocket. Enjoy pi up to 8 spaces with your brand new calculator. Oh, we've also thrown in some Apple Farm Service gear. Thank you for your participation.
Yes, thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, man.
I don't think it even has a pi button, so I hope you have 8 digits memorized. Oh. But I guess before we take off, Bruce, is there anything else that you want to share with those that are listening to Apple Farm Chatter before we take off?
Yeah, so I think keeping an eye on grain marketing this spring. So one thing that we remind folks in our grain marketing course, the data supports that if we wait until harvest, we know that 70% of the higher price opportunities are going to be behind you. So taking advantage of and keeping an eye on grain marketing opportunities here, everything from February all the way through June, there's an old adage that says, honor thy father and mother and do some grain marketing in the month of May and June around those Mother's Day and Father's Day. But some of the data suggests that we have a little bit earlier time frame. And so keep an eye on those markets. Do some forward contracting, some hedge to arrives, work with your local elevators. And it's no fun grain marketing when the markets are depressed or lower than expected. But keep an eye on them. There still should be some price opportunities and be ready to take that strike and make that position. Just be proactive as best you can in setting yourself up for prices that you can then harvest this fall.
Okay. All right. And then if they wanted to learn more, get in touch with you, how can they do that?
The best way would be, one way would be the website, our farmoffice.osu.edu, or they can reach out to me by email, clevenger.10@osu.edu. But our website is great, has a lot of farm management information. Again, farmoffice.osu.edu.
Awesome. Well, Bruce, thanks so much for being our guest today. We really do appreciate it.
Thanks,
yeah.
Appreciate it.
Learn a little bit more. I feel like you have a notebook full of many pages. We could be talking for hours and hours. So if you found this interesting, you should reach out to Bruce. Check out the website and see some of the things that he's published, has put out there. I think you'll find it really interesting. And we really do appreciate the time, Bruce. Wish you have a good rest of the day.
Yep, you too.
Yeah. So for myself, Ken Holmes, Travis.
Take it easy, guys.
Take it easy. We're heading out, and then Travis, how can they follow us?
You can follow us anywhere you like, without, you know, being creepy. But you can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Instagram. You can find the podcasts on RSS, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube.
Awesome. From everyone here at Apple Farm Chatter, happy farming.
Thank you for listening to Apple Farm Chatter. If you haven't, subscribe today. Want more from Apple Farm Service? Like us on Facebook, follow us on TikTok, and check out our website, applefarmservice.com. Happy farming from your friends at Apple Farm Service and Apple Farm Chatter. Hey.